So what should we do, Gary V? Let's wrap this up.
Yeah,
what should we do? What should people do?
To me, hustle is maximizing the energy you're putting into somebody. I'm blown away by people saying that they're hustling and they want to achieve these great things and then their actions don't match. It's like saying you really want to lose weight while eating a Big Mac, right? So to me, hustle would be putting all your effort into achieving the goal at hand. And for me, that means making every minute count. There are a million reasons why not, but there's one great reason why, which is you've just got to persevere, no matter what it is. It's just the way it is. It's hard being an entrepreneur. It's hard building a business. Everybody thinks it's so easy, that there's an entitlement. There's a disaster. Zinging China, here comes my US zing right now. There is an insane generation of 18 to 25 year olds right now that think they're entitled to having a business because they saw the Social Network movie and everybody's decided if you're a kid and you know what tech is, because you used Instagram early on, you're entitled to actually build a business. Building a business is hard. And you know what makes it really hard? Everything that happens every day of every moment. So, you can pick time, you can pick money as the one or two things that you think stop you from winning your game, but the truth is, there's a million reasons. 99% of businesses go out of business for a reason, and that reason is, it's hard. Hustle is putting it all on the line. Hustle is waking up one day, the day before you die, and realizing you gave it your all into the parenting of your children, the building of your businesses, the philanthropy that you wanted to do. Whatever you define, it's just, you know, all in, emotionally and executionally, in theory and strategy and in execution. Don't complain about it. You've made that choice. Don't bullshit me. Like, you wanna spend more time with your family? Spend more time with your family. This is back to what we said about keyboard warriors. I'm trying to be very careful about what I'm saying versus what I'm doing, right. Because that's how you get exposed. And I don't mean like people calling you out and being like, you suck. I mean to yourself. I don't wanna be exposed by myself. It's looking yourself in the mirror and saying like, am I doing this right? So to me, there's so many people that are talking shit about how big of an entrepreneur they're gonna be and how much they're gonna achieve, and they don't work on weekends. You know, I worked every Saturday of my 20s. Like, and I talk to 20-year-old entrepreneurs every single day. Lately, I've been saying to them, this Saturday, you're gonna have more time off than I've had in my entire 20s on a Saturday. So like, before you tell me how you're gonna be bigger than me, start thinking about what you're actually doing.
Right.
For the first 2 years that I ran VaynerMedia, we had no rent. We first worked out of a conference room. We then worked out of a co-working space before the whole WeWork and co-working space revolution, and I bartered my time to help that company in exchange for a very small space. We didn't buy furniture, we scrapped. And I'd already made it, I was already rich. And we scrapped. And so the biggest thing that I want to implore everybody here today to do is to take a step back and think about how fancy are they. Are you willing to be really, really, really ghetto? Do you really need that chair? Do you really need that piece of technology? Do you really need to fly that class? Like, I just think that we're living through an incredibly fancy culture of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship and CEO status is quite sexy. People are selling a lifestyle that is filled with lots of fun and trips and champagne and bikinis and bling bling and all sorts of horse shit, right? And I just think that era of this era is gonna come to an end somewhere within the next 5 years. And very honestly, I just don't want a lot of people in this room that dream to build their own businesses to have to go work at a bank or go work at a retail store. And so I would highly recommend something that I think is stunningly not talked about enough, which is if you're building a business, you have to be making money. Everybody thinks they're gonna be Zucks. Everybody thinks they're gonna build Snapchat. Go look at the data. The data shows that the far majority of this room will not succeed, not even close, to building an actual business. And I don't come here to be somber. I come here to remind you that there's only one thing you can do. The only thing you can do that can trump the moment mommy and daddy had sex to make you. The only thing that can trump that, the only thing that can trump your DNA, the only thing that is controllable, if you want it, if you want this, is work. if you've got a big mouth, and a lot of you do here, search the hashtag, and a lot of you say CEO, founder, owner. I call that big mouth. If you've got the audacity to do it, and so many of you have heard this from me, when I audit you, and I do, because I'm curious, it's how I learn. People talk a big game. I especially love when somebody hits me up on social like, Gary V, you're gonna buy the Jets, I'm gonna buy the Rams, you know? You know, everybody's buying a sports team. And I love to look at what that person does. And then I'll DM that person and be like, yo bro, nobody, unless they were a trust fund baby, ever bought the Rams when they go skiing for a week when they're 24. Nobody you know has become successful outside of it being given to them from their family. Nobody you know has actually created success without working their face off. It doesn't exist. So you can sit and talk about luck, and you can sit and talk about this, that, or the other thing, but I promise you, the only controllable thing you have is your work ethic. What is the definition of winning? And I think we all have different definitions, right? And I think that one of the things that I also want to say is that I'm getting scared that a lot of people that are following my journey hear me talking about buying the New York Jets, and I do aspire to buy a $3 billion sports franchise. I do. It is what I want. You can look at my fifth grade yearbook long before business was cool. It's what I want to do. But I'm awfully scared that it's pressuring the people that follow me into trying to achieve things that they don't necessarily want. They just think it's the thing you do if you're trying to be a successful business person. Let me promise you something. I know tens of thousands of people. I know thousands of people extremely well. I know hundreds of people deeply well. There is no correlation between how much money someone makes and their level of happiness. I have friends who make $47,000 a year and are the happiest people I know. Their work-life balance is on point, they're part of two soccer teams, they play video games, they watch every show they want, they take two vacations that they scrap together, and they're freaking happy as hell. And I know tons of people who I grew up with in the Silicon Valley boom who have hundreds of millions of dollars in their bank account and are as miserable and as lonely and as broken as you'll ever see. So I implore all of you to please reverse engineer and figure out who you are.
So I said the key to building wealth is not how much you can work. You can't work your way to wealth. You gotta invest your way to. And all wealthy people, black, white, Asian, Chinese, they own a whole bunch of shit. The people who aren't wealthy is because they don't own nothing. You only have your money sitting in cash. If your money is just sitting in cash, realistically, you're becoming poorer every day. Some people actually fear success. Success comes with a lot, right? But until you can overcome that average reality that you're living in, no matter what you're on, once you become comfortable there, it becomes average. Anyone can live in average. Everyone can live in mediocrity, right? Then there's those outliers who consistently push themselves to go to the next level. Knowledge is what gives us leverage in life. It's not about how strong you are. It's about what you can learn. And then how can you actively apply that? The more money they print, the more money that money loses value. It's the reason why the bank wants you to have your money there, so they can take it and use it and invest it so much and be like, hey, it's just sitting, I'm gonna give you 50 cents on whatever you had in there. And so the idea of ownership was, yo, we can just start owning everything that we, no matter if it's just a stock. Like, that's powerful. Because if you can start owning the businesses that you now consume every day, you turn a one-time transaction to a lifetime of profit. And that was major for me. Because if I go to the store and buy a pair of Nikes, that's a one-time transaction. In order for me to get something from them again, I gotta come back and buy another pair of Nikes. But if I own the Nike stock, long as I own it, it's a profitable vehicle for me. So that one-time transaction can become a lifetime of profit if I own that business. If I'm gonna buy Apple, if I know I'm an Apple user, if I know I got the phone, I got the AirPods, I got the MacBook, I got the PC, I'm excited when Apple's about to drop something, why wouldn't I own it? So you say wealthy people stop trading time for money? They start making their money work for them, and they give value to as much value to people as they can. The caveat, I mean, you know, we got a little deep into that. He said, the reason why you give people so much value is because if you give them so much value, they'll never leave you and they'll always be there for you. And you will never need for anything as long as you give wealth, you value to people. Wealthy people, first they get into stocks, then they start a business, and then they get real estate. As long as you believe in it, like you said, the only belief that matters is, what do you believe you can do? I personally believe that there is nothing I cannot do. And for me, it's all about impact, purpose, fulfillment. Like, the money is a byproduct of everything else. That isn't my focus. My focus is I have a knowledge and information that I know that can change lives. Not just one life, not just like lives. And so the way that you change lives is by consistently learning, finding new ways to put that information out there, being able to open up, being able to be vulnerable, because people need to connect.
Rise up, baby. Rise up. Rise up. Oh yeah, it's time to rise up. You hear me talking to you? It's time for you to rise up. It's time for you to commit. I want you to hear my voice in your sleep. Rise up. It's time. You've been wasting too much time. You've been delaying too much time. You've been procrastinating for too long. Rise up. It's time for you to commit. You asking me, well, commit to what? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Commit to your dreams. Commit to your goals. I need you to rise up and commit to yourself. Commit to the process. I'm tired of you getting on Facebook and social media and Instagram and looking at everybody else. You sit there and you spy on everybody else's success. You sit there and look at their house, their cars. You sit there and look at their purses and their bag. And you look and say, man, I wish that was me. I wish that was me. Oh, man, I wish that was me. People taking fancy trips, private planes. And you say it to yourself, I wish that was me. It can be you, but you got to rise up. You got to commit to the process. You got to get in the game. Stop being a spectator and start being a participant. Stop being a spectator and start being a participant. I need you to rise up right now. So I need you to rise up, and rising up ain't enough. I need you to make sure you understand the process, and the process means you gotta follow through. We gotta rise up, we gotta start, we gotta finish. We gotta rise up, we gotta start, we gotta finish. We gotta rise up right now, and we gotta start, and we gotta finish. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how talented you are. Because Bruce Lee said it best. A warrior is an average person with laser-like focus. A warrior is an average person with laser-like focus. Don't even worry about your ability. Don't you worry about opportunity. I need you to be a warrior right now and let your work get your opportunity. Let your work get your praise. Let your work open up doors. Let your work get people paying attention. Let your work get the whole world to notice. You gotta work. Stop thinking. Stop procrastinating. And you gotta work. I need you to rise up to fulfill your dreams. Rise up and attack your goals. There's no time to sleep. No time to nap. No time to waste. If you fall asleep, wake up and rise up again. You should work so hard that you collapse in the bed at night. Sometimes in the afternoon, you're so weary from grinding that your body just collapses. That's okay. Have sweet sleep. But when you wake up, grind again. Now is your time. Now is your season. Now is the moment to capture the vision. Let me tell you something. Here's what success is all about. You need these three things. Are you ready? You need skill set, mindset, and opportunity. Skill set, mindset, and opportunity. You need to rise up and understand what success is all about. Skill set, work on your skill. Mindset, work on your mentality, baby, and your opportunity will come. Trust me. When your opportunity comes, you better be ready. When your opportunity hits, you better respond, baby. And all the work you put in, all the grind you put in, when your opportunity shows up, you're going to be ready. Because hard work pays. Let me tell you something. Hard work will pay off. Your dreams are going to get there. But I need you to start. I need you to follow through. And I need you to finish. Now we gotta create the plan. What's your game plan? What's your game plan? Okay, I got you excited. I got you fired up. I got you motivated. But what's your game plan? Step one, you need to know what you're going for. That's step one. You gotta know what you're going for. You gotta be clear and decisive and have clarity for what you want. Because if you don't have clarity of what you want, you're gonna get distracted. If you don't have clarity for what you want, you're going to fall for the okey-doke. You don't want to fall for the okey-doke. No, no, baby. If you want red heels and high heels and red bottoms, don't you quit until you get high heels, red bottoms. Don't you quit until you get exactly what you want. I'm thinking about the CEO of Walmart right now. The CEO of Walmart right now, Doug McMillon. You guys know he started unloading trucks at the distribution center in the summer, didn't even have a full-time job. He started at Walmart part-time. He finished school, became an assistant manager and a buyer, and now he's a CEO. Hello, he rose up one day. He got started. He stayed committed. And he finished. Well, you might say, well, Walton, you know, it might not work for me. I'm not a CEO. Yes, you are. You're a CEO. Yes, you are. Guess what? I want you to hear me clearly. You are the CEO of you. You are the CEO of you. Don't you ever think that you're not a CEO. Because you're the CEO of you. I need you to think like a shark. Because a shark never stops moving or it dies. I need you to become the CEO of you. And the only way you can do it is you gotta rise up. You gotta stay committed. I know it's gonna be hard. I know it's gonna be ups. I know it's gonna be downs. But let me tell you something. You're gonna get there, baby. I know you got a great new idea. Congrats. You found an incredible new opportunity. Opportunity, you need it. I got it. And I know you're going to make it happen. I know you're going to change the world, but you got to have your mindset. You got to have your skill set, and you got to wait for your opportunity. And when your opportunity comes, you got to go forward. You might think to yourself, Walter, man, I've been touched about what's going on in the world, and I want to change and make this world a better place. And how can I help others? Here's how you're going to help others. Rise up. I mean, Nelson Mandela was no different than you, an average man with a laser-like focus. Martin Luther King was no different than you, an average man with a laser-like focus. Oprah, you put in your favorite person. Bill Gates, come on, come on. Whoever you really look up to, I want you to understand that they were an average person, just like you. They had an idea. They started. They followed through, and then they finished. So can I ask you a question? Now what you gonna do? What are you actually going to do? Are you gonna say, man, I love all these audios, man, I love all these videos, you get me pumped up, and you gonna do nothing? You just gonna sit there and do nothing? I need you to be that average man. I need you to be that average woman. But I need you to understand that you gotta have rise up in you, and you gotta have laser-like focus. There's greatness in you. If you rise up, there's so many people counting on you. If you rise up, you've heard this a million times, that the cemetery is full of potential. And that's true, because that person didn't do what they needed to do through the dash. We all are born and we all gonna die. And I'm gonna ask you a question. What are you gonna do with your dash? Stop searching Facebook and being a spectator on all social media. I came here to motivate you to rise up and make sure that you take advantage of your dash. As long as there's breath in your body, I need you to take advantage of your opportunity when it shows up. Before I promise you one thing, it's going to be challenged, and you're going to be asking yourself before I promise this, can I really do it? Yeah, you can. How do I know? Because you made in the image of God. That's why. I will bless you as far as your eyes can see. He told you that. I will bless you as far as your eyes can see. He promised you that. He says, I will bless you as far as your eyes can see. Can I ask you a question? How far can your eyes see? Some people's eyes see welfare. Some people's eyes see WIC and food stamps. But some people's eyes see 100,000. Some people's eyes see 1,000,000. Some people's eyes see 1,000,000,000. Can I ask you a question? What do your eyes see? What is your vision? I need you to commit to it. Whatever just went through your mind right now, I need it to be big, and I need you to commit. I need you to be big thinking. I need you to commit. I need you to make a plan, and I need you to follow through. That's all success requires. That's all success requires. That is all success requires. It's for you to rise up, follow through, and finish. And what you're going to follow through is no different than the ball player. It's the plan. And let me give you a little secret in basketball. A shooter got perfect form. I need you to have perfect form for your success to happen. I promise you one thing. If you hold yourself accountable, you'll get there. If you hold yourself accountable, it's going to happen. The worst thing you can do is just wait for other people to hold you accountable. Wait for other people to motivate you. Wait for other people to inspire you. How about motivating yourself? How about inspiring yourself? Have you ever thought about motivating somebody else? Have you ever thought about inspiring somebody else? Have you ever thought about lifting somebody else? We need you to be a light in the midst of darkness. This world has gone crazy. This world needs you to rise up. This world needs your dream. This world needs you to achieve everything you got on the inside of you. This world needs you to be you, but in order for you to be you, we got to have you to rise up. Every morning when I wake, I see that sun rise up, and I want you to be just like the sun. Every morning, I want you to rise up, follow through, and finish.
The word entrepreneur is a bullshit term. It's one of the most overused nonsense terms out there. I can teach anybody to become an entrepreneur in 2 minutes flat. All you got to do is go to fiverr.com, open an account, and offer to make videos or images for someone. Boom, you're self-employed, you're an entrepreneur. It's a bullshit term. You have that. And then you have, at the end of the spectrum, probably the greatest living entrepreneur today, Elon Musk. But the spectrum is so wide, it's a bad definition. So there are other definitions that you got to look at, right? You got to look at, are you working in a job where you can earn the money you need to live the life you want while being fulfilled and happy doing the work you do? I think that is the definition. You don't have to be an entrepreneur for that. Many of the people creating the biggest changes in the world are not entrepreneurs. Think about the engineers at NASA. Think about the people who are inventing new technologies. Think about the people who come up with new medicines that are changing lives. Many of these people are working for companies, but they are paid well, they love their jobs, they're making a contribution to humanity. And it is enough if you're that. This bullshit idea that you got to be working for yourself is so outdated. Rather, you got to look at three things. Number one, can I exercise what I'm really good at doing? Number two, do I love what I'm doing? Number three, am I making money doing this? There are lots of different opportunities, but you got to try to find these new fields, these new things which are emerging. Now, here's the good news. According to futurist Peter Diamandis, between 2022 and 2026, the world will see as much change as between the year 1900 to 2000. In 4 years, starting next month, we're going to see as much change as between the years 1900 to 2000. New technologies, new opportunities, new things are going to emerge. The whole field of Web3 is emerging right now. And this means there's going to be so much opportunity for disruption. But if you're an entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, it's good news. because there's going to be so much change and so much opportunity for you to disrupt the established players. Someone who's starting a new business, the first thing is, don't quit your day job. You got to make sure that you have income, that you have safety, that you have food on the table. Don't get desperate and don't put yourself under that stress. Now, when I was working on my day job, it still gave me 2 hours a night to work on my side hustle. And of course, I had the weekends. You might have to sacrifice evenings. You might have to spend less time on Instagram, on Netflix. You might have less weekend time. If you can dedicate yourself, and if you can ensure that you're constantly learning and learning and learning, odds are you're going to be successful. That's tip number one. Now, tip number two is this. Don't try to do what everybody else is doing. Because if you do what everybody else is doing, it's going to be a lot more challenging. So when Instagram was just getting off the ground, right, in like 2010, you could go and start an Instagram channel on makeup, and maybe you might end up like Huda Beauty, which has like 49 million fans today. But they were one of the early ones. You got to get in early. I think TikTok is still early. So I think there's an opportunity in TikTok. Instagram, I think, is later stage. It's not just about social media. For example, coaching. Coaching is blowing up right now. More and more companies are looking for coaches for their employees. I have a coach. So many people I know now get a coach. It used to be a situation where if you got a coach, people were like, is something wrong with you? But now coaching is so important. So coaching is a really great way to make an income. I know coaches who are making millions of dollars a year. Of course, they are outliers, but they love what they do, right? Even if you were making $100,000 a year as a coach, that's a really, really, really good lifestyle. Because you're helping people, you have mobility and so on. A third one, which is with the whole crypto space. Don't be stupid when it comes to crypto, but definitely there are interesting opportunities emerging with NFTs, with DAOs, DAOs. There are some great YouTube channels where you can learn about crypto and you can start to understand that marketplace. Keep in mind that, you know, investing in things like Bitcoin are risky. If you bought Bitcoin 1 month ago, you would have lost a lot of money today. And so you got to have a really long-term perspective. So here's the other tip. Don't wait to know what your company is going to be about before registering your company. I had no idea what the company was going to be about. But I knew I was going to start a company, and I knew the first clue is that we were going to be selling a meditation product on AdWords, but there could be other things we were doing as well. I also had a Web 2.0 product. Back then, Web 2.0 was all the rage. It was new. I had a Web 2.0 software application that I was going to build and sell as well, and I needed a name. And so I got online, and I found two really good names. One was called Rainbridge, and I thought, okay, I'm going to call my company Rainbridge. And the other one was Mindvalley. I am so glad I picked Mindvalley over Rainbridge. And so I created this company called Mindvalley, and then Mindvalley launched several products. One of our early products was actually, and it's so painful that this product failed, it was an early version of what today would be Instagram. We called it Blink Life. It was a way to take pictures from a phone and then share these pictures with your friends on a particular website, and then we had created a system where you could innovate by saying, okay, this picture, only my mom will see, or this picture, absolutely my mom will not see, only my girlfriend will see. So we created this really cool thing for picture sharing. Interesting statistic, 40% of the success of the company is timing. Our timing was too early. Like, phones didn't have cameras. Cameras were not really good. This was 2005 when we attempted to launch Blink Life, and it very rapidly fizzled out and died. But we kept testing and trying and testing and innovating. And I kept experimenting with different ideas. And eventually, one idea really started exploding, and that was basically selling meditation online. And that's how Mindvalley started. My executive team, they decided to skip their salary for a month, so that everybody else could get paid. We had maybe 60, 70 employees at that time. And fortunately, January came in, and January is always a great month for personal growth. And we had a campaign that worked. We were able to get back on our feet. But these type of moments, they are soul crushing. They keep you up at night. But you gotta be prepared to go through them on your journey. But again, if you adopt the attitude that the number one thing is your growth, is how much you're learning, you're better able to go through these ups and these downs. Like, the ups don't go to your head, and the downs don't destroy you.
We're never given any sort of financial education, so what ends up happening for the majority of people is you end up just being a pawn in the system. Because guess what? Corporations are going to get you to spend, and they hire some of the smartest people in the world to get you to borrow more money, to create programs to entice you to borrow more money. Again, this doesn't make them necessarily evil, this is just the way the system works. The system is fueled by spending. What we don't have, the problem is we don't have the education to then tell us when we should spend and when we shouldn't spend. This is what it is. It's like gravity. It's happening around us. Do you want to fight gravity or understand gravity? Because when you understand it, now you can take advantage of the system too. Because now when you understand this, well, you can own a piece of the system as an investor. And now you can benefit from the way the system works. Because now if we take one step back from this and we go just a little bit more higher level, guess what? Our entire financial system is reliant on this. I released a video talking about how inflation is making the majority of people poorer and they never see it happen. You put your money in the bank, you're losing 2% of your savings value every single year. It might not seem like a lot of money in 1 year, but over the course of your career, you were losing a lot of money by just saving your money in the bank, which is why inflation keeps so many people poor. Inflation comes from the word inflate. What do you inflate when you have inflation? You're inflating the monetary supply. You're inflating money. So the Federal Reserve Bank is the central bank of the United States. While they're called the Federal Reserve Bank, they're not federal. It's not a federal entity. It says so on their website. They're not a reserve because they don't keep any cash reserves anywhere. And they're not a bank. You and I can't go there to deposit money. So what do? They control and oversee our money system in the United States. And one of the things that they're able to do is influence how much money is out there. They can print money and they can take money away. Well, when you print money, pieces of paper, without producing more wealth, what happens? The value of each individual dollar goes down. Because you can't just produce more wealth, you can't print more wealth, but you can print money. And so this money, this pieces of paper, then loses value. And we've been seeing this happen for a long time. Whenever you print more money, the value of each individual dollar goes down, which then in effect causes the price of things to go up. That's why $100 today cannot buy you what $100 could 20 years ago. And it's why $100 today can't buy you what $100 could 100 years ago. But what does that mean when we go back to the topic of, you know, the system that we were just talking about? Well, inflation, the whole purpose of it, because the Federal Reserve Bank doesn't want 0% inflation. If you listen to anything that they say that they have a target of 2% inflation. But why 2%? Why this random number? Why not 0%? Why do we want any inflation? Well, because it's their way of growing this system. See, inflation disproportionately benefits the financially educated and the wealthy, and inflation disproportionately hurts the financially uneducated and the poor. Because when you don't understand inflation, well, you're the one that's paying the price. If you leave your money in the bank and your bank is paying you 0.1% a year in interest, while inflation is 5, 6, 7% a year, you're losing value in the bank. Your savings are slowly losing value each and every day because you're saving your money. Now, this doesn't mean you shouldn't save any money. This means you have to know how to save your money strategically. That means save your money for an emergency, save your money for an investment, or save your money for a big purchase. But then beyond that, why are you putting cash aside? Well, it should be to invest. But now going back to that question of the system, right? What does inflation do? It grows the economic system. It encourages more spending, more dollars out there. And so who does that benefit? It benefits the economy. It benefits the investors who own a piece of the system, but it hurts the people. Because if you don't understand this, what happens? Oh, maybe you got a raise because of inflation. Great. People spend more money. Great. But now you're poorer today than you were a few years ago, even though it might look like you have the same bank balance, even though you might have gotten a raise because the prices of everything around you have gone up faster than your income. And that's why today you have people struggling more than they were 50 years ago. 50 years ago in 1970 or early 1970s, you'd have one person going to work, the man of the house. And they would have one income. And the one income would allow a family to survive comfortably, have a nice home, have a nice car, and have a nice vacation. Today, you have the majority of households are two-income households, and people are struggling to buy homes. People are struggling to afford a car. People are struggling to have any sort of freedom to go on a vacation or really do anything, even though we have two-income households today as opposed to one-income households in the 1970s. So what's the difference? The value of the dollar is dropping. This grows the system. This benefits people who understand the system, the investors, the financially educated, but it comes at a price. And the price is at the expense of regular people. This is why now, when you understand this, you have to change the way you look at money and change the things that you do use with your money. Because if you're making money just to spend it, well, now you're making everybody else rich at the expense of your own wealth. What I'm saying is make yourself rich before you make everybody else rich. I don't want you to never have the nice things. I want you to have the nice car. I want you to go on the nice vacations. I want you to have the nice home, but I want you to be able to afford it first. And right now, the most important thing financially is to make yourself rich first. And ironically, the people that are looking rich are sacrificing their real richness. But if you want to actually become rich, well, you're not going to be looking rich when you're trying to become rich. Building wealth, it's a very simple formula. Spend less than what you make and invest the difference. Period. Now, if you want to achieve more wealth, you need to invest more money. How can you invest more money? You can spend less money or you can earn more money. It's as simple as that. Now, there's a limit to how much less you can spend. There is a limit to how many costs you can cut, but there's no limit to how much money you can earn. So if you've already cut back as much as possible, there's no other way that you can cut back and you still want to invest more and you want to see the returns sooner, then you got to earn more money. Now again, how can you earn more money? Well, if you don't want to do it through starting a business or a side hustle, then you got to do it through your career. Are you at a job that will allow you to earn more money? Are you in a position that will allow you to earn more money? Maybe you have to get a certificate. Maybe you have to go back to school. Maybe you look for a different company. Maybe you look for a completely different career. Maybe you add on a second job. Now, I can't answer that question for you, but this is where you just have to be honest with yourself and see what type of life do you want to live, and are you being honest with yourself? And then you just plug in the numbers.
There's no need even to have a college degree at all, or even high school. If somebody graduated from a great university, that may be an indication that they will be capable of great things, but it's not necessarily the case. If you look at, say, people like Bill Gates or Larry Ellison, Steve Jobs, these guys didn't graduate from college. But if you had a chance to hire them, of course, that would be a good idea.
I would love to talk to Elon Musk, so I'm sure that would be ridiculously fun. I would love to find out. I'd like to ask him about his thought process. And also, I'm really curious about how in the world he manages to do multiple impossible things, because doing one impossible thing is impossible, but doing like five impossible things is the product of five impossibilities, and that just seems like hyper impossible. But he's managed it. Think about it. Think about what he did. He built an electric car, which is like hard, and then he built a rocket, and then he blasted the car into space on his rocket. Like that's not real. That doesn't happen. But it did happen, and he did it. And so I would love to talk to him.
It's very difficult to start companies and quite painful. I think that's important to bear in mind. I don't know if that's probably not encouraging. Let me put it this way. If you need inspiring words, don't do it. A challenge for entrepreneurs is to say, well, what's the difference between really believing in your ideals and sticking to them versus pursuing some unrealistic dream that right. doesn't actually have merit. And that is a really difficult thing to tell. Can you tell the difference between those two things? So you need to be sort of very rigorous in your self-analysis. I think certainly extremely tenacious, and then just work like hell. I mean, you just have to put in, you know, 80 to 100 hour weeks every week. And there need to be reasons to get up in the morning. You know, life can't just be about solving problems. Otherwise, what's the point? There's got to be things that people find inspiring and make life worth living. If you're creating a company or if you're joining a company, the most important thing is to attract great people. So either join a group that's amazing, that you really respect, or if you're building a company, you've got to gather great people. I mean, all a company is a group of people that have gathered together to create a product or service. And so depending upon how talented and hardworking that group is and the degree to which they are focused cohesively in a good direction, that will determine the success of the company.
Who do you think is really leading the way forward?
I think SpaceX, probably because of Elon coming from South Africa, having the competitive spirit to make a good bit of money at PayPal, mm-hmm. and then put that into his dreams. Elon would like to get involved in selling launches to the Air Force, mm-hmm. But he's being opposed some. He almost went broke. He had three failures, and one more, in his words, would have taken him out of the business of rocket launches. Mm-hmm. He sort of succeeded on that one, pretty much. He has a very good rocket, a very good price. I asked him if he wanted to maybe lead efforts toward Mars by allowing people to use his rocket on their project to fly by of Mars, mm-hmm. and then combining another company. I said, I'm in touch with very wealthy people, or maybe in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, mm-hmm. and perhaps we could have some investment money. Mm-hmm. He said, no, we don't need any money. We'll do it ourselves.
The space business is quite hard to start a company in the space business because it's such a capital intensive business. So it may be better to do something in solar power, or if you're going to do it in cars, do it in as kind of a component supplier for cars or something like that. That all those things improve the odds of success.
Okay.
Right. I mean, if other people are putting in 40-hour work weeks and you're putting in 100-hour work weeks, then even if you're doing the same thing, you know that you will achieve in 4 months what it takes them a year to achieve. When I was a kid, I was wondering kind of what's the meaning of life, like why are we here, what's it all about, and I came to the conclusion that what really matters is trying to understand the right questions to ask, and the more that we can increase the scope and scale of human consciousness, the better we are able to ask these questions. If somebody is doing something that is useful to the rest of society, I think that's a good thing. Like, it doesn't have to change the world. If you're doing something that has high value to people, I mean, I think that's fine. Like, stuff doesn't need to be changed the world just to be good. But, you know, in terms of things that I think are most likely to affect the future of humanity, I think AI is probably the single biggest item in the near term that's likely to affect humanity. So it's very important that we have the advent of AI in a good way. If you could look into the crystal ball and see the future, you would like that outcome, because it is something that could go wrong, as we've talked about many times. We really need to make sure it goes right. Working on AI and making sure it's a great future, that's the most important thing, I think, right now. obviously anything to do with genetics. If you can actually solve genetic diseases, prevent dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that with genetic reprogramming, that would be wonderful. So I think this genetics, it might be the sort of second most important item. I think having a high bandwidth interface to the brain, like we're currently bandwidth limited. We have a digital tertiary self in the form of our email capabilities, our computers, phones, applications. We're effectively superhuman. But we are extremely bandwidth constrained in that interface between the cortex and your sort of that tertiary digital form of yourself. And helping solve that bandwidth constraint would be, I think, very important for the future as well. On signal over noise, a lot of companies get confused. They spend money on things that don't actually make the product better. So, for example, at Tesla, we've never spent any money on advertising. We put all of the money into R&D and manufacturing and design to try to make the car as good as possible. I think that's the way to go. So for any given company, just can keep thinking about, are these efforts that people are expending, are they resulting in a better product or service? And if they're not, stop those efforts. You may have heard me say that it's good to think in terms of the physics approach or first principles, which is, rather than reasoning by analogy, you boil things down to the most fundamental truths you can imagine and you reason up from there. And this is a good way to figure out if something really makes sense or if it's just what everybody else is doing. And it's hard to think that way. You can't think that way about everything. It takes a lot of effort. But if you're trying to do something new, it's the best way to think. And that framework was developed by physicists to figure out counterintuitive things like quantum mechanics. So it's really a powerful method. You guys are the magicians of the 21st century. You know, don't let anything hold you back. Imagination is the limit, and go out there and create some magic.
I was working at a financial firm in New York City with a bunch of very smart people, and I had a brilliant boss I much admired. I went to my boss and told him I was going to start a company selling books on the internet. He took me on a long walk in Central Park, listened carefully to me, and finally said, "That sounds like a really good idea, but it would be an even better idea for someone who didn't already have a good job."
You can have a job, or you can have a career, or you can have a calling. And if you can somehow figure out how to have a calling, you have hit the jackpot, because that's the big deal.
I met Jeff Bezos 25 years ago, and he told me, "Dave, I want you to invest in my company." "What are you doing?" "I'm going to start a bookstore in my garage." "Okay." "And I'm going to put it online. People will buy online, and I'm going to ship out of my garage. But if you invest in me, Dave, someday I'm going to be the richest man in the world. I'll do over $100 billion. First of all, there is no such thing as $100 billion 25 years ago. Statistically, there's no such thing. Countries didn't have our national debt wasn't $100 billion. And this dude's telling me at 26 years old that he's gonna be the richest man in the world because he has a garage and the internet. That was his truth. No, but he did not know it, and neither did I. But the difference between him and I is I was laughing, scoffing, and jesting at him, and he was already applauding himself, going, "At the right way, at the perfect time, I'm going to make as much as I can as quickly." And I'm sitting there going, "There's no way this is going to be a big business."
Do something you're very passionate about, and don't try to chase what is kind of the hot passion of the day.
Seen in that light, it really was a difficult choice. But ultimately, I decided I had to give it a shot. I didn't think I'd regret trying and failing. And I suspected I would always be haunted by a decision to not try at all. After much consideration, I took the less safe path to follow my passion, and I'm proud of that choice. As a young boy, I had been a garage inventor. I'd invented an automatic gate closer out of cement-filled tires, a solar cooker that didn't work very well out of an umbrella and aluminum foil, baking pan alarms to entrap my siblings. I'd always wanted to be an inventor, and she wanted me to follow my passion. There's a military phrase that I especially love, and it says, "Slow is smooth and smooth is fast." And I have seen that in every endeavor I've ever been in. That's the kind of thing that really allows you to make progress. You know, you get certain gifts in life and you want to take advantage of those. But you, I guess my advice on adversity and success would be to be proud not of your gifts, but of your hard work and your choices. So, you know, you may be, the kinds of gifts you get, like, you know, you might be really good at math. It might be really easy for you. That's a kind of gift. But practicing that math and taking it to the next step, that could be very challenging and hard and take a lot of sweat. That's a choice. You can't really be proud of your gifts because they were given to you. You can be grateful for them and thankful for them. But your choices, you choose to work hard. You choose to do hard things. Those are choices that you can be proud of.
You can choose. We all get to choose our life stories, and it's the choices that define us, not our gifts. Everybody in this room has many gifts. I have many gifts. You can never be proud of your gifts because they're gifts. They were given to you. You might be, you know, tall, or you might be really good at math, or you might be extremely beautiful or handsome, or, you know, there are many gifts, and you can only be proud really of your choices, because those are the things that you are, that you are acting on. And one of the most important choices that each of us has, and you know this just as well as I do, is you can choose a life of ease and comfort, or you can choose a life of service and adventure. And when you're 80, which one of those things do you think you're going to be more proud of? You're going to be more proud of having chosen a life of service and adventure.
There's never been a better time to be alive. I mean, it's just an incredible the amount of inspiration that the world generates for me, and I think for a lot of people. It's just, it's insane the amount of change and invention and opportunity. Your life, the life you author from scratch on your own, begins. How will you use your gifts? What choices will you make? Will inertia be your guide, or will you follow your passions? Will you follow dogma, or will you be original? Will you choose a life of ease, or a life of service and adventure? Will you wilt under criticism, or will you follow your convictions? Will you bluff it out when you're wrong, or will you apologize? Will you guard your heart against rejection, or will you act when you fall in love? Will you play it safe, or will you be a little bit swashbuckling? When it's tough, will you give up, or will you be relentless? Will you be a cynic, or will you be a builder? Will you be clever at the expense of others, or will you be kind?
Every time you figure out some way of providing tools and services that empower other people to deploy their creativity,
you're really onto something. You know, you're very lucky if you have a career. A lot of people end up with a job. If you don't love your work, you're never gonna be great at it. Jules Verne, Mark Twain, Galileo, Newton, all the curious from the ages would have wanted to be alive, most of all, right now. As a civilization, we will have so many gifts, just as you as individuals have so many individual gifts as you sit before me. How will you use these gifts? And will you take pride in your gifts or pride in your choices?
Your last name is bigger than your first name. I don't care how you got your name, but you need to be living for your last name. McDonald's is a last name. Abercrombie and Fitch, last names. Armani is a last name. Baskin Robbins is a last name. Chrysler is a last name. Fisher Price, Gucci, Hennessy, Harley Davidson, Hilton, Honda, Kohl's, Kraft Foods, Lowe's Movie Theater, Marriott is a last name. Maybach is a last name. Nordstrom is a last name. Pillsbury is a last name. Porsche is a last name. Procter & Gamble, two last names. Rolls Royce, Charles Rolls, Henry Royce, last names. Turner Broadcast System, Ted Turner, last name. Versace, last name. Wells Fargo, Henry Wells, William Fargo, last name. Walgreens, last name. Wrigley's, last name. Welch's Grape Juice, last name. Here you are, you think you're buying a product. You are not buying a product, you're buying a name. You think you're wearing a product. Hey, look at this product. No, you're saying look at this family. And what you don't know is while you're making every family rich, you're making yourself broke. So you done went to one family called Wells Fargo and got $200,000 so you can go to another family called Rolls Royce so you can give them money to get yourself a car so you can go back to the hood and see the Joneses and say, look at what I got. Meanwhile, Wells Fargo, their family's sitting up being rich and Harley Davidson's and Rolls Royce are being rich and the Joneses are sitting there holding up people's stuff saying, look at what we did and we broke. What if I told you that your blessing is attached to your name? That part of the reason why you're not wealthy yet is because you keep trying to make Yolanda wealthy. You keep trying to make Tasha wealthy. What if you made Johnson's wealthy? What if you started thinking about your kids? What if you started thinking about your legacy? What if God started dropping Canaan and opening up windows of heaven? Because now you're not just thinking about you, you're thinking kingdom. Legacy. There's power in your name. A legacy is something that is passed down. It is your mark. It is your footprint in the earth. It is your contribution to the world. Your legacy is something that is passed down. It is your mark. It is your footprint in the earth. It is your contribution to the world. I don't care about legacy. I'm single. I don't care about legacy. I don't have no kids. I don't care about legacy. My family never cared about me. I don't care about them. My life is my own. Why do I need to even think about legacy? Well, here's the thing I have to say to you. The thing you need to know is this. You are leaving a legacy whether you want to or not. Everybody in this room is going to leave a legacy. The question is, are you going to be intentional about the legacy you're leaving? Are you actually going to be intentional, or are you just going to let anything be passed down, anything be given to others on your behalf? Build now, but experience later. If you are going to leave a legacy, you got to start building now. I'm talking to college students, okay? Don't wait. Oh, when I graduate, there's 4 years. I'm just going to live it up. And then when I graduate, I'm going to be free. I'm going to get serious about my life. Can I tell you something? I know 40-year-olds who are living under the consequence of things they did from 18 to 22. And they thought that when they left school, that they left the issue, not realizing that the issue followed them all the way into their adulthood. I'm telling you that right now you are a builder. Right now, you have to start building your life now. You got to start building credit now. You got to start building your finances now. You got to think like a farmer. A farmer thinks sowing. I'm sowing seeds, realizing that I'm not going to reap this until later. There are some people who are attached to you who are saying, Mama, can you do something with this name? There's some people who are saying, Dad, can you do something with this name? Maybe God gave you the name to change and reverse some of the stuff that the name meant one day. I wish there was somebody in this room that say my name might mean one thing right now, but I promise after today, this name's getting ready to change. I promise after today, everybody's going to want my last name. I'm here to let you know you are a curse breaker. You are not just getting married, you're breaking a curse. You are not just graduating from college, you're breaking a curse. You are not just getting out of high school, you're breaking a curse. You are not just saved, you're breaking a curse. And everybody around you is about to be blessed because of what God's getting ready to do in your life. Some of us lived a life that stunk so bad. And many of you are paying a price for a life that you didn't live, but somebody lived before you, and they handed you down a name or a life that stunk so bad that now you got to pay forever for it. And I'm here to let you know, stop giving people this dirty, nasty, stinky life. Why don't you build a legacy so when somebody gets into the car of your life, they want to say thank you instead of I can't believe what you did to me. Everybody here has struggled with an addiction that's not yours. It was an addiction that your family didn't deal with. It was an addiction that your father just overlooked. And so it got passed down to you. And now you're struggling with this addiction. But truthfully, if you track the addiction, your father had it, and your grandfather had it, and your great-grandmother had it, and your whole family had it. And because they didn't deal with it, because they weren't thinking legacy, now you're driving in a car that you gotta pay for. And God is saying, the buck stops here, that this is it. I put you in the earth because you're about to stop some stuff. You are sitting in this place saying, I don't care about legacy. You need to care about it because somebody's got to live in the life you have. You are passing something down whether you want to or not. And I'm telling you that you are going to have to look at your life and recognize that everything you are doing right now is having major and great impact. If you're going to leave a legacy, you're going to have to remember how you started, but focus on how you finished. I don't want you to forget how you started. I don't want you to forget that father wasn't there. I don't want you to forget some of the conditions that you were raised in. I don't want you to forget some of the rejection and some of the pain. Nope, I want you to remember how you started, but do not for one second let it dictate how you're going to finish. There's somebody in this room saying, Pastor, I don't understand. I hear you, but this sermon got me all messed up. I was feeling good. And then you done preached this sermon, and now I'm thinking about the 60 years of my life I've wasted. I'm thinking about the 60 years of hurt I caused. I'm thinking about the 60 years of stuff I did. I got some college student who's sitting here saying, Pastor, I wish I heard this word in my junior year in high school. I wish I heard this word in my sophomore year in high school, because I did some stuff as a sophomore that I'm still paying for now. I did some stuff as a senior that I'm still paying for now. Can I tell you something? Your yesterday may have been jacked up, but God knows how to take the old and make it new. I came to preach to somebody today and let you know your first 60 years was jacked up, but your next 60 days, God says, I will turn it into such impact. I will give it such greatness that you won't even remember some of the stuff that you jacked up.
The hustler does not waste time. Somebody with talent, somebody with connections, somebody with some education and some experience, oftentimes they waste time. They feel like they can afford to. They feel like they have permission to, right? They feel like they've got it figured out. The hustler says, I don't have a second to waste. And so while you're sleeping, while you're being entertained, I'm beating on my craft. The hustler says, I'm beating on my craft. The hustler says, I'm going after it. The hustler says, I can't afford to miss this moment. I can't afford to overlook this critical time, this crucial opportunity. I'm going to give it everything I have, period. When you've got this hustler's mentality, you're not looking for a handout. You just know you have to outwork everybody in the room. You got to put the work in after hours. You're not wasting your time being entertained. You're not wasting your time watching TV all day. You're not wasting your time complaining about what you don't have. The hustler has already come to the conclusion that if they don't have something, they have to become. It's not connections that wins. It's not even education that wins. I can be inundated with information. I can be educated, but with no application. The hustler moves in a different realm of wisdom, a different realm of application, they're going after it. Everything that they have is on the table. The hustler is going to outwork everybody in the room. The hustler says, if me and you are on the treadmill, two things are going to happen. Either you're going to get off first, or I'm going to die trying to beat you. Right? Because I'm completely sold out to the dream, the vision that I'm carrying. The hustler's mentality within the context of entrepreneurship is, I am totally committed to this. I am totally committed to this. The difference between game changers and city shakers and influencers and disruptors and the people that just talk about it, people that just dream about it, have visions about it, fill notebooks about it. The difference between the two, number one, is that they are absolutely clear on what it is that they've been called to do and what it is they've been called to build and who it is they've been called to become. In order to really lock in the hustler's mentality, you must understand the distinctives that really make a hustler a hustler. Number two, a hustler is committed and consistent. So this is not a Monday through Friday thing, it's a Monday through Monday thing. Every single day, I'm beating on my craft. Every single day, I'm looking to become more than I was yesterday. I am not in competition with anybody. The hustler says the only person I am competing with is who I used to be yesterday. You may not have been born with natural talent, but you can put work in and build a skill set. You can beat on your craft every single day. Put the hours in. No days off mentality. As long as you're building, I'm going to put the hours in, I'm going to put the time in. There are life-changing opportunities that are going to arise in your life. Critical moments, crucial times that are going to arise. And the first thing on a hustler's radar is not the opportunity, it's the mindset. Because if I get the opportunity with the wrong mindset, I won't maintain the opportunity. I'll lose it. And the hustler understands the power of retention, okay? So the hustler eliminates distractions. Your talent, your good looks, your connections, your education, your experience is just not going to get you. The hustler is just programmed to get things other people can't have. Every single day somebody's doing something you're not willing to do to secure the future. And so when you go into the day with that mindset, that list will shrink. The list of people that are outworking you, it'll shrink. So you got to dedicate to creative time. You need an army to fulfill destiny. So you got to be connected. You got to grow your network. And all that you do, and your failures and your successes, learn from them. Note takers are the money makers. Hustlers, take notes. It's difficult to manifest what is not written down. Put me in a room with 100 people. I'm going to take more notes than them. I'm going to listen better. I'm going to have more fun. I'm going to learn more. I'm going to talk less. And so the movement that we see across the earth from the high achievers, the successful entrepreneurs, those who are launching businesses and organizations, it all starts with their mindset, their mentality. There's a difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. The psychology of a champion is just different. Hustlers are just wired differently. And that's the difference between really a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. The hustler's mentality is, how can this challenge be my opportunity? And what can I learn? The fixed mindset says this challenge is a speed bump. It's a roadblock, it's a barrier, it's a wall, it's a lid, it's a label, and I can't move forward. And so I'm just going to settle. The hustler thinks differently. So before we see the movement of a hustler, the end result, the end game, their objectives, their targets and their aims executing, all roads lead back to the mentality. If you're going to win, fight for your future, you're going to have to prepare your mindset for the workload. Whatever it is that you're setting out to do is going to require a different version of yourself that comes with a different mentality, a different set of habits, period. So you got to prepare your mindset for what it is that you're going after. You can't be afraid to change. You got to beat on your craft every day. You got to be able to recognize what's working and what's not working. Contrary to popular belief, they say never have a plan B. A hustler always has a plan B, right? Because if plan A tanks, I got to keep moving. There's no excuse. I don't have permission to stop. The hustler's mindset is that if I'm going to have something, I've got to first become something. And so hustling can't be a weekend thing, right? It can't be, I'm going to do it this Friday. I'm going to do it Monday. Okay, I'm motivated on Monday. Hustling is a mentality. It's a code of conduct. It's a government. It's a lifestyle. This is what I do every single day. And I don't have an on and off switch. And we're dealing with the future, the conversation of the future, the conversation of launching a successful business and enterprise and organization. All roads lead back to your mindset, your mentality. The way that you see this thing is going to determine your future. A lot of people want to lose weight. A lot of people want to see transformation. A lot of people want to see something different. But right, I can't think muscles. I can't be connected to somebody popular or influential or who is affluent and then just get muscles. Like if I don't put the work in, I'm not going to have muscles. And so the hustler knows how to prioritize their time. The hustler knows how to lock in. You gotta lock in. You have to put the hours in. You may have to raise children, cultivate your marriage, and work your side hustle all at the same time. Everybody knows if you don't go to the gym, if you don't get on the treadmill, put the cardio in, if you don't hit the weights and lift, you're not going to walk around with the physique that you see in your head. It's going to remain a conversation, a vision, a dream. How do you manifest what you see in your head to hold it in your hand is that you got to have that hustler's mentality. That's just the truth of the matter. I mean, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. We got to get this. If you're going to manifest in your hands what you see in your head, then you got to have the courage, the confidence, the self-belief, and the self-determination to go out every single day and make it happen. If you have to listen to this 1,000 times, understand how hustlers are wired, the psychology of a champion. Just keep moving, keep hustling, keep grinding until you no longer have to introduce yourself.
Nobody ever won a Nobel Prize working 5 days a week, 9 to 5. If you're going to do something great, it takes a lot of time, and hard work is important. So there are not people sitting around just get lucky and all of a sudden the world goes to them and says, I want you to be our leader. It doesn't usually happen.
I must be passionate about it, and I must believe it, and I'm never doing an impression of another person. So I always come from a place of saying what I really believe, because you can't transfer to somebody that which you don't experience yourself. I can give you passion, I can give you energy, I can give you my belief if I'm experiencing it.
Well, in my view, success is happiness. The most elusive thing in life is personal happiness. Thomas Jefferson wrote about the pursuit of happiness. He never told us how to actually get it. But finding somebody that's happy with their life is really good. So if you ever meet a poor person and they are very happy with what they're doing, why should you say your life isn't successful? They're very happy with what they're doing. If you meet a very wealthy person and he or she is tortured with their money and they don't know what to do with it, their children hate them, everybody hates them, is that person successful? I don't really think so. I think success comes about when you are happy, because that's the point of life to some extent, is being happy. That's why we're all here, I guess, to some extent. We want to make the life better for other people. But to some extent, if you are making life better for other people, you're going to be happy, in my view.
There's this misnomer, and you've watched this even in your own life or the successful people you've interviewed. So there's this thing people think that, like, I'll be happy when. Once I get, like, this big, amazing home, or once I get this car, or once I get this relationship or an amount of money, then I'll allow myself some happiness. The problem is the finish line always moves. You never arrive there, right? The other part is people think, well, if I enjoy myself now, I'm gonna lose my drive. In other words, if I can just wire myself with enough pain all the time, I won't lose my drive or ambition. The truth is there's no correlation between the two at all. There's no relationship between you feeling complete pain all the time and losing drive. And so I talk about living in a state of blissful dissatisfaction. And really, the best example of that would be like if you've ever, I love a good meal, right? You know, if I bought into a great piece of steak, if you're a steak eater like I am, you take that first bite, it's like complete bliss, right? There's no correlation between how great that tasted and your lack of desire for the next bite. In fact, that bliss causes you to want more of it. And so the more we can begin to reward ourselves with bliss, we're not going to lose our dissatisfaction. We're not going to lose that. And so for me, our brains, this dopamine hit you get when you do something successful, if you constantly cheat yourself out of that hit, right, biomechanically in your body, less and less in the future will you want to achieve the next level, the next dream, the next step. And that's why so many people stall out in life. They got to a certain point and they cheated themselves out of the bliss, out of the celebration. It's important that we celebrate our wins. We celebrate our lives because it causes us to want the next fight. It keeps us hungrier, not the reverse. And so for me, I want to live in a state of being grateful and blissful now, not waiting for some future place or date that may never arrive.
So what is, looking at the historical perspective, what are things that are safe bets in terms of this job is going to be here in 5 years, that this is a good place to begin building that skill set?
I think in terms of any environment, the lessons that we get over and over again is that you can't be sure what the next environment and twists and turns are. What you don't know is greater than anything you do know. So if you were in the airline business or you were in the hospitality business, and that was wonderful and you liked it and everything else, all of a sudden that changed in important ways. So the important thing are the more general abilities. In terms of investing, what that means is you need to know how to diversify well. That's the most important thing. In terms of any aspect in life, to know how to deal with what you don't know is more important than anything you know, because the world is so much more surprising than you can really be sure of. So in a general sense for skills, I mean, I think, and skills are part of what are your environment. You know, find out those things that are self-sufficient and maintain flexibility. You have to know how to maintain flexibility and change well. If your career is in one area, you have to know how this. You have to develop the skill for changing a career, and that all comes down to knowing how to find the path, to know how to triangulate well with others.
And so if you're really familiar with what you're worried about and what your problems are and your fears are, and that becomes your dominating thinking, I know you've all heard this, but here's the reason why. Your mind loves what's familiar, okay? And so if you don't go touch dreams, for example, just experience it for a second. For example, we would go down once every 8 weeks. If I did well in business, we really knocked it out, we could find a deal, I had $200, we'd go to the Ritz-Carlton or some hotel ocean, and for one day oceanfront, feel like what it felt like to valet your car, right? Walk in the lobby, Mr. Milet, welcome back, right? She'd go get a massage, I'd play a little bit of golf, and just for that day, I'd touch the dream. And then maybe we do it again in a month or two, and again in a month, just little taste of it. My mind began to become familiar with it. And more crazy, I started to kind of trick myself into thinking I belonged there. Because we never end up anywhere we don't believe we don't belong, and then we're not familiar with. So there's these things you'd like to do in your life, either visually seeing them over and over again and repeating those images to yourself, that's powerful. But a double whammy is to not only repeat them and see them, but to go touch. See, there's one thing that's a visual stimulus in your brain that makes you want to do something. The triple whammy is you could see it, touch it, feel it, and smell it. If you allow all your senses to experience something, it becomes far more familiar to your brain. And so I'm a massive, massive advocate of touching a dream in any form you can get it, the best of which is actually going and experiencing it short term. You begin to believe you belong there, you're a little bit better. And so you will not probably produce many things in your life that you've not visited either mentally or literally thousands of times. And so if you want to end up somewhere, you better be visiting them. Those could be dreams, visions, but the most important thing is if you could actually, more powerful, if you could go touch them short term, massive difference. Drive by the neighborhood, see the cars. If you want to spend your life in service for your church or your community, take a day out every month and actually do it. Know what it feels like for an afternoon to feed the homeless, and you begin to love it and feel it and believe you belong there, more and more chance that you'll be able to do that full time someday. The people I know that are really happy are very self-aware. In fact, the best entrepreneurs I know are very self-aware. They're aware of their shortcomings, right? They want to improve them. They want to get to the next version of themselves all the time. And so for me, self-confidence comes because I didn't have it. And I think anytime you meet somebody like yourself or myself who might now appear self-confident, it's because I really had to find tools and resources because I was so insecure and shy and introverted. So I had to find techniques and resources to build that up in me. And for me, it's very simple. It's the promises that I keep to myself. If I have a habit over and over of beginning to stack one on top of the other of keeping promises I make to me, not other people. In other words, the minute you begin to get external in your life, worrying about what other people think about you, right? You've lost all control. And it never fills you up. And people's admiration, people's gratitude towards you will never fill you up. It's your own inside. And so for me, self-confidence comes from keeping the promises I make to myself. And the other part of it is being aware I'm doing it. In other words, most people don't give themselves enough credit all the time. They're very aware of these 20% things and not aware of the 80, right? And that's why the dosage is so important too. You've nailed it. It should be 80-20, right? Because people get addicted to this. I'm not good at this. People don't like this about me. I don't feel good. Instead of focusing on the 80 and stacking it up, wow, I did eat what I said I was going to today. I did get up when I said I was going to. I made the amount of phone calls. I treated people in such a way I promised myself. It's not just doing those things. It's rewarding it. It's being aware of it and stacking that up. When I work with athletes, the successful athletes I work with, when they're in a slump, it's never that they can't hit a ball anymore or make a shot or swing a golf club. They've lost their self-confidence. Somewhere along the way, they've lost the ability to focus on the things they are great at and stacking those promises they make to themselves. And the way I get them to break their slump is not correcting their swing or getting them positive. It's getting them to acknowledge the small promises, showing up to batting practice early, hitting that extra bucket of balls, beginning to reward themselves for the extra promises they keep to themselves, puts them back in a state of self-confidence. All of a sudden, they're hitting the ball great.
Our lives don't get better by chance. They get better by change. Change is one of the necessary laws of life. Remember this. Action and adaptability create opportunity. Adapt and overcome. And watch everything change before your eyes. Adaptability isn't just some secret for survival. It is the power to build the future. Adaptability is the capacity to be modified for a new purpose, to be moved this way and still punch through targets and reach my goals and be everything I've been called to be, but I've got to adapt to the times. Adaptability requires movement. Adaptability requires growth. Adaptability requires wisdom and knowledge and understanding and revelation and awareness. We've got to be able to recognize when we're outdated, when we need an upgrade, when we've got to go to that next level, and I can't be embarrassed about it. Adaptability is not buckling under pressure. Adaptability is understanding that in order for me to have this lifestyle that I see in my head, I'm going to have to raise my standards. This is an adjustment. This is a modification that in times past, this version of me was good enough, but it only got me where I am. And in order for me to go to that next level, something inside of me has to change. So when you face storm, when you face adversity, when you face trial, when you face tribulation, in the eye of the storm, in the middle, in the core of your devastation, when you are faced with opposition, that's when you raise the heat. You don't change your message, you change your methodology. Are you understanding me? Adaptability is not buckling under pressure. Adaptability is not losing your moral compass. Adaptability is raising your voice. And so the harder life hits me, the harder I'm going to fight. The harder I'm going to believe. The harder I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep going. I will persevere and I'm going to build resilience. And so the harder life hits, the stronger I get. You've got problem solving skill. You've got a resilience. You have a determination. You have a measure of commitment that nobody in the room has because you've been able to adapt. And for many of us, we are in the halftime of our destiny. And if you're going to win, you are going to have to make the adjustments, the necessary modifications to have your future. When I become more flexible, more agile, more adaptable, another thing that happens is that we build our inner resilience.
And this isn't just about honing in on your problem-solving skills, but resilience literally changes your brain. It changes your operating systems. It shifts your behavior. Resilience empowers you to build new habits. It's not running from your programming. It's upgrading. It's taking it to the next level. The necessary growth strategies, necessary modification, personality adjustment, attitude upgrades, the necessary, the wise adapt themselves to the circumstances like water molds itself to the pitcher. To understand the revelation of adaptability is to realize that life is lived on levels. I've got angles, I've got approaches, that destiny is in the details. It's how I see this thing. It's how I can adjust my thinking. It's how I can upgrade my inner software. At some point, you gotta sit back and think to yourself, you know what? I've been here too long. I've thought like this too long. I've hurt too long. I've been fractured long enough. I've been depressed long enough. You know what? I've been here too long. It's time for me to go. We all have to get here where we realize we have not adapted to the current times. And this is not a departure from authenticity. This is not losing yourself. This is finding your next level. The question is, are you willing to adapt? Adaptability is the bridge to the future. I need to be able to adapt cognitively. I gotta be able to adapt emotionally, my personality, my behavior, my language, my thinking. I've got to be able to adapt. And it is only when I'm willing to accept this reality that I can have my future. When I become more flexible, more agile, more adaptable, another thing that happens is that we build our inner resilience. And this isn't just about honing in on your problem-solving skills, but resilience literally changes your brain. It shifts your behavior.
It's time to break through. You've lost long enough. You've been in your learning season long enough. It's time to apply what you've learned.
Adaptability is not buckling under pressure. Adaptability is not losing your moral compass. Adaptability is raising your voice. You got to start thinking about the future. You've got to start thinking about sustainability. You got to start thinking about future generations. Your perspective, how you see this thing, how you approach this thing, the angles that you take, the approaches, the mentalities, just one little tweak in the game, and there is a future for your family. And this is the power of understanding that if I can make a few tweaks, if I can make a few adjustments, if I can see this thing just a hair differently, winner by a hair. Have you ever heard that? There are champions that win by a hair because they made an adjustment. There are golf players and basketball players and football players and soccer players and fighters and warriors and NASCAR drivers and champions and lecturers and teachers and students, movie directors and artists and people all over the globe who have made adjustments, who have adapted to a circumstance, who have adapted, who have modified and tweaked their game and beat on their craft and got the trophy. This is why there's power in mentorship, because a mentor will show you something you didn't see. A coach will pull something out of you that you never knew was there. The ability to adapt, to make a tweak, to make an adjustment. It's the group of employees that's been called to work two more hours. It's the team that's been called to win a championship in the snow or rain or sleet, or the weather's changed, or now all of a sudden the crowd is no longer cheering your name. Can you adapt? This is the question. This is the golden ticket. Everybody wants to win, and everybody wants new zip codes and area codes, and everybody wants impact and influence. But if I don't have adaptability, I'll never have my future.
The fastest way to get to where you want to be, find someone that's already there and ask them for help. You would be amazed how many older, successful people want to help. So don't talk yourself out of asking for help. But also, one of my favorite ones is show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. I see so many people surrounding themselves. See, your frequency is your neighborhood. And let me explain what that means. Is your frequency is created by your neighbors. And if you're sitting in the projects on a lawn chair drinking a Colt 45, you may have all the skills in the world, all the knowledge in the world, all the desire in the world. And when you turn to your buddy on the lawn chair drinking and you say, hey, can you help me? How many options, opportunities, and touches of favor do you think someone in your neighborhood is going to be able to give you? I'm telling you, frequency and vibration wise, surround yourself with the right people and the right ideas. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Surround yourself with people that are going to give you more options, more opportunities, and more touches of favor. Surround yourself with people that feed you. So many people are being bled. 80% of their time is around people that make them feel like crap. They're watching things that make them feel like crap. They're listening to things that make them feel like crap. They're surrounding themselves with people that make themselves feel with crap. They're being bled all day long and wonder why they feel bled. Take my advice, ask for help, surround yourself with people that feed you and feed them. It'll be amazing the difference in your life. When you're young, because they were young and they know how important, they know that they would not be where they're at if they didn't have someone elevate them, and they wouldn't be where they're at unless they're elevating others. You need to elevate others to elevate yourself, but also you need others to elevate you to elevate you. It's amazing. And everyone, see, they get fooled by the closed mind. I tell people, life is so simple today because of the size, scope, and scale of access that we have. We don't have to write. You can DM them. You can email them. You can call them. This wasn't available when we were working for the Oilers or wherever. And why is that important? Because I teach kids, especially, just look for the open mind. How do you find an open mind? Smile at someone. If they smile back, they have an open mind. Tell them you like their clothes. Tell a woman you like their purse or their shoes. If they smile, they have an open mind. It takes 1,000 times the effort to convert or to transition or re-engineer a closed mind than an open mind. And remember this, everybody has an open mind some of the time. Some people, almost all the time. Some people, almost never. But if you catch someone who has a closed mind when it's open, it's really valuable. So qualify people by open minds. They have open hearts and open hands. And guess what? They surround themselves with people with open hearts, open hands, and open minds, which allows you to create two types of people in your neighborhood. People who help you and people that know someone that can help you. Nothing can help you more. There's different worlds that I've lived in. And the first world that I live in is a common one. It's the world of not enough. And not only is it a perceptive world of not enough, it's actually economically was a world of not enough. I had a single mom, 6 kids, 5 boys, 1 girl. My mom worked 2 jobs as a second grade teacher, packed our dinners in a paper bag, drove us around in a station wagon to fill up turnstiles at convenience stores just so we could eat. But I was happy. The only time I wasn't happy is I would catch my mom crying to financial despair. It was always some sort of financial stress of clothes, food, summer camp. It varied in degrees, but my mom wanted the best for us and couldn't afford it. And so she used education as her empowerment tool. But I, unlike my siblings who went to Harvard, Penn, and Columbia, I felt as if, gosh, if I could be rich and buy my mom a house and a car, then I would be completely happy. I have this extraordinary family, great education, but I was always missing money. And so created a world of not enough. I would say, why me? Everything happened to me. Right? When the car broke down, it happened to me. I was a victim. And then through my philosophy of enjoying the consistent everyday, persistent without quit pursuit of this gold mine, this potential of wealth, I, 9 months out of law school, despite anyone believing in me, they mostly laughed at me, scoffed at me, and made fun of me because I wasn't doing what everybody else thought I should do. I made my first $1 million and bought my mom that house and car.
9 months.
Within 9 months of graduating, I entered a new world, I always say, a world of just enough. And that world was a confirmation of a belief that I had. Money could buy you love and happiness. And 3 years after starting that job, we exited at $3.4 billion in 1995. 1995, $3.4 billion exit changed my trajectory. I went to the Silicon Valley. I raised hundreds of millions of dollars. By the time I was 30, I was knee deep in this world of just enough for me. And what I learned was, because money was my God, I used to tell Mom, hey, I don't believe in God. She said, oh, you believe in God, you just don't know what God you believe in. And I didn't really understand what she means. I get a little choked up thinking about it, because at 30, I married my dream girl from the fourth grade. A girl at sixth grade camp, my best friend Robbie, asked her to go steady for me, and she said no. Tell him to ask me himself, and he embarrassed me. So I threw eggs at her, rocks at her. I'm now married to my dream girl. I'm a multimillionaire. I live in a dream house. I have dream cars, dream boats, dream motorhomes. I have a ski mountain. I have a golf course. Everything I ever dreamed of. But I wasn't happy. And when I wasn't happy in this world of just enough, everything became a trade or negotiation. Even giving, right? I would give to receive recognition, acknowledgement, business development. And I'm sure you know people like that, that live in this world of for me, and they seem very optimistic and philanthropic, but usually they live in that world of a void, a shortage, and an obstacle that I did. And I was always in search of happiness, buying things to be happy, buying more things to be happy, buying things to impress people for their approval, buying more things to impress people that I didn't even like. I had to come to grips that I had become a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, an overseller, a back-end seller. And that I sat there that day taking stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. This is 2 years earlier than me losing everything. I will tell you, if somebody asked me about my bankruptcy at that time, imagine having to ask your mom to move because you forgot to take the house out of her. The only reason I want to be rich is for my mom. Only one reason I want to be rich is to buy her that house and a car. And I have to tell her, hey, you need to move out of your house because I lost your house. And I would tell you at that moment, it may have been one of the most challenging, painful things in my entire life. But here I am 14 years later to tell you it's the best thing, or one of the best things that's happened to me. Without that bankruptcy, without that experience, I would either be divorced or dead. So I'd already learned the lessons, I was practicing them, but there's still that reality of, oh my gosh, I went from owning 33 homes in San Diego alone to a rented house, rented furniture, a pregnant wife with three daughters under 10. What am I gonna do? And I gotta tell my mom she's moving. I have really messed this up. And in some respects, I was more equipped, but in others, it was like, okay, I already got the lessons, why are you punishing me? And when I laid there in bed that day of filing bankruptcy and keeping it secret, because I wasn't the person that I am today, I illuminate all my right? I am who I am, you're either gonna love me for who I am, but you're not gonna, literally, you're not gonna love me for who I'm not. You can hate me for who I am, but you're not gonna love me for who I'm not. I'm going to tell you the truth and illuminate to the best of my ability, spend minutes and moments outside of the truth, minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness. That's the secret sauce of what I do. But when I lied there in bed, it was another coincidence because tears were rolling down my face. I could not lift up my arms, right? It was harder almost because I knew the lessons. It wasn't like I was in that ignorant arrogance where I was in blame, shame, and justification. I was lying there being accountable, and that's hard. And at that time, accountability still was tied to, what did I do to attract this to myself? What am I supposed to learn? It's evolved to, what did I do to participate in it, or the perception of it, and what am I supposed to learn? But I remember, like, I wanted to get up. TV was on, almost like The Jacket. One of my favorite movies is Rocky. And so I'm lying there, completely crushed. And I turn it on and there's Rocky One. The end of the movie's on and it's that scene, the music's going, I'm crying, and Apollo Creed is just beating Rocky. And I don't know if you remember the scene, he's hanging and then he gets to the ground and his, you know, what's her name, Adrian's in the back and he's sitting there and he couldn't get up. Six, right? And Mickey's like, stay down, right? And everyone else, get up, and Rocky. And I'm sitting there, I'm down. And I'm watching him, he looks up. I see it, he looks up. Somehow, the music going, and he gets back up, right? And then he pops Apollo in the ribs. And that round ends, the second to the last round. And the movie continues on to eight more movies or whatever. I think to myself, what if he didn't get up? What if that movie ended that he was just crushed? He had learned all the lessons. Remember, he went through all the different lessons in the movie that made us root for him, love him. But that one moment of bankruptcy, he had a decision to make. If I can look up beyond all but everybody else, I'm gonna get up. And because he got up, we all know what happened in the other 8 movies. I wanted to see what was gonna happen in the other 8 movies for me. Yeah, well, first of all, look up and then breathe. Think about what you want. Think about how you can help and who can help you. And then start thinking about how. And then prioritize that very first step, prioritize that very first day. Start thinking about what you want and continue every day enjoying that consistently, persistently in the pursuit of your potential. Also, have an open mind. Remember, I talk about what I think I want in the future. I'm open to learning and changing my mind. I love fast learners and I love immigrants. And so if you feel that way, look up and then think about what you want, who you can help and who can help you, how best to get that done. I promise you each day will become easier. It'll aggregate upon itself and pretty soon you too will be an overnight success.